Gummidge over Roosevelt Avenue. This is TheBeelPod.com coming to you from our studio high atop Crossroads Books and Cafe. Today is Thursday, the 4th of October, 2012. On this date in 610, in what has been called the ballsiest and mas macho move of the 7th century, Heraclius arrives by ship from Africa to Constantinople, overthrows the Byzantine emperor, and becomes emperor himself just because. 1535, the first complete English-language Bible, the Coverdale Bible, is printed with translations by William Tyndale and Miles Coverdale, not to be confused with Mrs. Drysdale of the Beverly Hillbillies. In 1582, Pope Gregory XIII implements the Gregorian calendar, making October 4th, 1582, followed directly by October 15th, 1582, which is just weird and creates centuries of double holidays in the land of Orthodox Christianity.
We've been thanking him ever since for that one.
Yeah, exactly. Two Christmases, two New Year's, it's great. In 1824, Mexico adopts a new constitution and becomes a federal republic. In 1830, the Kingdom of Belgium separates from the Netherlands and begins its lengthy pretense of being a real grown-up country. In 1853, the Ottoman Empire declares war on Russia, starting the Crimean War, the true beginning of which started in a dispute between priests over who gets to put a candelabra in a particular corner of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. True fact. In 1876, Texas A&M opens and becomes the first university in Texas. Take that, Longhorns. In 1927, Gutzon Borglund, the Swedish sculptor, begins work on Mount Rushmore. He also did the coolest equestrian sculpture in Washington in Sheridan Circle, by the way.
I thought he was Danish.
Swedish, Danish, same thing.
Oh, no, I've been there.
She's
it's
Danish,
amazing.
Not Swedish.
I'm Swedish and Danish.
Wasn't it the same country or, like, I don't know. Or was it, that was
anyway, that was
Norway.
The midlife work.
Sorry,
it's amazing.
The
it's
Scandinavian
amazing.
Sculptor. Yeah, I don't know. I thought he was Swedish.
I thought he was Danish,
okay.
Yeah. And I've been there. Have you been there?
Okay, listen, TheBeelPod needs us, and TheBeelPod next, we need clarification on that. Please help us out in our forum. In 1957, the Ruskies launched Sputnik, leading to a mass conniption in the United States and subsequent math science fetish in American schools for many years. On that same day, Leave It to Beaver premieres. Coincidence? I think not. 1992, the Rome Peace Accord ends 16 years of civil war in Mozambique. By the way, a few days later, yours truly drove the first non-convoy vehicle from Mwanza, Malawi to Harare, Zimbabwe, through the infamous Renamo-controlled Tet Corridor in Mozambique with a Walloon named Philippe Lucas. In 1993, in Moscow, tanks bombard Parliament in 2001, the first and only time NATO confirms invocation of Article 5 of the North Atlantic Treaty, which states that an attack on one member is an attack on the alliance. Birthdays today are Buster Keaton, Alvin Toffler, and Susan Sarandon. This week's Georgian Journal column is about punishment, how the seeds of the United National Movement's electoral failure was through its punishment of Shevardnadze's people and how that morphed into the criminal justice system and how they illegally amended the Constitution on the 6th of February, 2004, after only 9 weeks in power. So, big story this week, lots going on. Our coverage will focus on the new quarterly inflation report just out from Geostat. Now, inflation figure calculations in Georgia are a tricky thing. Let's first discuss in detail the composition of the consumer basket. Just kidding! Georgian Dream, or Otsneba, as those in the know call it, won a decisive victory in the electoral contest for parliament against the ruling United National Movement Party. According to the Central Elections Commission, voter turnout was 61%, just under 2.2 million voters. So far, 99.87% of the districts have been counted.
Well, they've all been counted, but I think the results have not been tabulated.
You know what that means, actually? That's one...
It's like
that's one station. Wait, there's one station. I wonder which station that is, actually. Somebody should look through and check that out. With respect to the party list seats, which account for 77 of the 150 seats up for grabs, only Otsneba and UNM passed the 5% threshold. Sorry to the other parties. The Georgian Dream received 55% of the vote. The National Movement received 40% of the vote. Labor Party got 1.24%.
So Shalva needs to get a job now.
I don't know what's going to happen to Shalva, you know. He's not going to be paid for not being in Parliament. He should have been, by the way. He should have been in the 99 Parliament. He was unfairly denied. I mean, the Electoral Commission designated that he would get 6.8 under the 7% threshold of the day, and he definitely had over 9%. So he never got to do
so
it.
So you think it's just karma unfair that he got paid for 4 years for not doing it?
I guess, yeah, well, he just, you know, never took his seat and just snapped off a bunch of snazzy comments. The question is now, which TV station will find it in their interest to stick him on TV all the time commenting about who knows what? Newright's got 0.43%. Oof, the Christian Democrats received 2.04%. They were the ones that everybody thought might make it in, but, you know, no dice. Kartuli Dasi got 0.11%, and the People's Party got 0.02% of the vote, which is like Kartuli Dasi itself and not their relatives, you know, yeah. Really.
Like, is Kartuli Dasi Free Georgia, like the pro-Russian party?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I can't remember who they are. And no. I don't know whether they'll... Yeah. Okay, and People's Party got 0.02%. These results are generally consistent with the observation of TI Georgia, as well as ISFED's parallel vote tabulation, which gave Georgian Dream 55% and UNM 41%. So now, according to CEC data, about 39 majoritarians will be Georgian Dream, 39 will be Otsneba. But there are still issues in Terjola, Ambra Lauri, Kutaisi, Martvili, Zugdidi, Sechnachi, Marneuli, Tetritzcharo, Tsalka, Khashuri, and Bolnisi. Now, looking at the math, the reason why this is so intense right now, as you may have heard, there's a lot of sort of hullabaloo around around each of these stations. So, the proportional seats as they sit right now, 150 seats in parliament total, remember, Georgian Dream, 44, United National Movement, 33. The majoritarians are the complicated one because we have a number of cases that these the issues in particular districts tend to be in the districts that are very close, and those that are within 5 or 6% are Khashuri, Sechnachi, Tetritzcharo, Ambra Lauri, and Terjola.
And then Sechnachi, TI found apparent voter fraud. They rigged some protocols and took basically the victory away from the Georgian Dream candidate and gave it to the UNM. So this district has been annulled, as far as I know, by the Central Election Commission. In Khashuri, we had special ops teams walking into the polling stations after the counting, before the protocols were written, and they rewrote the protocols and the local commission signed off on them, again taking what appeared to be a lead for the Georgian Dream in these stations to the UNM. So these stations also have been canceled.
I want to know what those people were thinking, though. I mean, like, you have to be a bit more nuanced than that in order to be able to take the election at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really nice to hear from the new interior minister, you know, what somebody was thinking about, you know, in doing that. But anyway, it seems as if Sechnachi was very close. And, I mean, there was a case where our observer, the hardest working NGO in Georgia, Transparency International Georgia, had an observer there with a protocol that did not match the one that was posted with the CEC. Now, hats off to the CEC for actually posting the protocol so that they could be checked and posting the precinct by precinct results, which is very, very important and is a huge check on fraud. But we checked, and the form had been changed at some point along the way.
What's interesting is that they've been doing this also for the previous election too. And what happens though is that it ends up being really, really late. The observers are tired. The observers are like underinformed, and then they end up maybe getting a piece of paper if they demand it. And the piece of paper frequently does not have the appropriate signatures and stamps on it. And so, you know, it's good that you guys did the appropriate work this time and are able to say that this is the official one that was given to me as I walked out and has all the signatures and all the stamps. Because I think in the past it could have been that they disputed whether or not these were actually protocols from those stations.
Those are all scanned and uploaded. You can take a look at that on the TI website. But so if you assume that Khashuri and Sechnachi will go to Georgian Dream, and I'm not saying it should, I'm just saying that in those cases it seems pretty likely. Then you have Tetritzcharo, where they're very close. I don't know whether there's what will happen there, but they're only 2 percentage points apart. It's 46-48. Ambra Lauri, it's 46-49%, so it seems pretty close. And in Terjola, it's 45-49%. So we'll have to see if those are going to be recounted, and if there are going to be any revotes, and what will happen there. More complicated is Zugdidi, which is 36 to 57. But that's
for the UNM.
For UNM.
And we should point out who's running there.
Right. But if that's Roland Akhalaya, the defense minister or ex-defense minister and now ex-interior minister's father, who was the prosecutor of the area. Anyway, so if Khashoggi, Sekhnachi, Tetzpitzchado, and Amran Aoudi and Terjola all go for Georgian Dream, that would be 99 to 51 total seats in a 150-seat chamber, making it very, very close to a constitutional majority for Georgian Dream. And so that's why these are so intense. Essentially what's happening now is that UNM supporters are trying to prevent revotes, and Georgian Dream is trying to encourage them. So we'll have to see what happens with there, and hope that the will of the people was counted on the actual election day. And if it was not, then there'll need to be revotes.
Yeah, and there have been in the past few days in a number of these places, or in most of them, there have been protests by Georgian Dream supporters. The government has alleged that there were threats and intimidation against people working in the district election commissions, and there was pressure on them. We don't really know what is going on in most of these places, but I think this afternoon, as we are recording, there's a protest in Zugdidi, mm-hmm. and the U.S. ambassador went out there, several NGO representatives went out there to make sure that things stay as calm as possible, because that is a very disputed area with Iraklia Lasagna against Roland Akhalaya.
Yeah, it's a quite a complicated situation, because I think particularly in Zugdidi there really was Kudi, which is this sort of weird paramilitary interior ministry,
constitutional group. Protection the service.
It's sort of the group that deals with internal security and hits officials, and it's an unhealthy group. And in Samagrello, what the ruling party says is that because Misha brought the Magrellians back into the political process in 2003, that he's very popular there. Maybe what I hear is that Roland Akhalaya personally has been a real heavy there, and has there's been a lot of intimidation in that area. So they're saying, well, there's been intimidation beforehand, but in some ways that sort of, well, okay, there were elections, and if people were intimidated into not voting, it's difficult to say that there needs to be a revote because of that. On the other hand, now just seeing a statement from somebody who works for PR for the ruling party and in the government, saying that Roland Akhalaya has been verbally threatened and stuff like that, which is kind of like
the poor guy.
Oh, the poor guy. On the other hand, there does seem to be a big mob out there, and I think really most importantly, Bidzina says, first he said that Misha, after Misha's super graceful, speech and saying, okay, fine, I'm in opposition. Then Bidzina had a sort of long 2-hour, weird monologue with a bunch of journalists, in which he told, Elena Bedwell of Bloomberg that she asked, what was it?
She asked if the thieves in law are going to come back.
If the thieves in law are going to come back. And he said, who put you up to that question? And sort of yelled at her. And,
That's a stupid question. I'm sorry. That's a stupid question. Because that all relates to the whole, what's his name?
There's the tape.
But
on the other hand, there's sort of,
it's not just an innocuous question.
Right. But you can get out very easily. You can say, no, Georgia will become even a safer place. We will make sure that.
Exactly. It was a question that I think, there are fears about the fact that, that the guy who conquered the thieves in law, no matter how you feel about that, was Bacho Akhalaya, who's now, in a questionable circumstance. He's certainly no longer interior minister. And, you want to ask, what does this all mean? There's a lot of rumors floating around about that. And yes, the question was to sort of bait a response. He took the bait and freaked out a little bit. And so anyway, he yelled at her, and he should not have. He should have given the response that Mr. Even-Keeled Austrian Euro guy would recommend. But, you know, still there's, you know, he said Misha should resign and all this other stuff. And then everybody, and then there were a lot of articles about that. And I think he's very much in the news right now, all these journalists here. And so he walked back from that and said, well, it was just sort of a personal recommendation, not a big deal.
He's been recommending that since the day he came out.
Yeah, he has. But so, you know, all I meant to say from that is that things have gotten, you know, pretty intense. The U.S. ambassador, you know, congratulated Beijing on that. But the fact that the U.S. ambassador is, you know, is rushing to Zugdidi is a big deal. I mean, considering what recently happened in Libya, you know, the tempers are really, really hot there. I mean, I think it's it really illustrates that, at least for the U.S. government, that, you know, people really want calm heads to, you know, to prevail in this case. And whatever happened in the election there, you know, let's not make the decision with, you know, umpteen gazillion very angry people in front of a district election commission.
Yeah, but sorry.
I don't know. I mean, I have a couple. I mean, thoughts about the elections in general. You know, I think it was pretty surprising to me how well the Georgian Dream seems to be doing. I thought that they would, you know, have a good showing, but certainly not the numbers that we're seeing. And, you know, part of that was, I think, based upon the polls that we'd seen in advance, you know, and there's been a lot of discussion about why were the polls wrong. And I think if you look at the polling, actually, there were such high numbers of people who were undecided and refused to answer that it was a little bit difficult to understand exactly what people's voting behavior would be. And then, of course, you had, as people are calling, Goldani Gate, you know, with the prison videos coming out. And I imagine that played probably a fairly large role in the way that undecided or people who were leaning away from, let's say, the United National Movement, you know, in terms of how they voted. But I think, you know, in what we've just been discussing here, you know, if you look at, we've been talking about Georgian Dream and UNM. I think it's important to remember that within Georgian Dream, we have a number of parties who are represented. And I think it'll be interesting to see how many of those parties will actually make it into parliament. So I don't really know on the party list, you know, where those people are listed and, you know, who's actually going to get into parliament. Because once you have, you know, an understanding of what the different party representation will be in there, you know, you might have a better understanding of how the parliament's going to function in the future. I mean, the other question is, to what extent will the United National Movement stay together in the minority? And, you know, that's kind of anybody's guess, but my understanding is that there might not be the sense of strong party unity that, you know, people might make an assumption about.
Well, a couple things I'd say about that. I mean, first of all, I think related to a number of different things. First of all, who are the individuals that are going to make up parliament? But also, you know, those recordings that came out that UNM,
the government, the secret, with somebody.
With air quotes, the bodyguard felt he, you know, needed to release and then, you know, disappeared. And, you know, I don't know, his wife said that he sounded like he was on drugs. I don't know, who knows? But somebody who has the ability to tape lots of, you know, phone calls and conversations of these people close to, you know, close to the Georgian Dream, saying some pretty insulting stuff like Guba Sanikidze talking about Bidzina's kids and, you know, some other things, a lot of sort of, you know, internal unpleasant stuff. I think that might have some effect. But also just in general, how the whole campaign worked, that I suspect that some of the sort of pros in the Georgian Dream and the, I mean, the fact that like the three people appointed to sort of negotiate this whole deal were Alassania, Usupashvili, and then his you know, his guy. That's important. I suspect that those two political parties will end up being pretty important in this new parliament. You know, the other thing is in terms of UNM splitting, yes, I mean, of course, there's been stories forever that the majoritarians are going to get bought off by Bidzina or something like that. Yeah, okay, maybe. But by the same token, the party itself, I mean, there has just been an avalanche of interest in people worried about Georgian Dream and Ivanishvili that want to join the party. I mean, citizens and things like that. So, I mean, in some ways, this could be the national movement kind of going back to its roots and becoming a real political party. And, you know, rather than basing itself on, you know, it's what it has going for it is state power, you know, thinking about who it is and what it, you know, what it means. That may or may not have influence in parliament, but it will certainly have some effect on the street, I think.
Maybe a few words on the general conduct of the election. I think we saw a lot of small problems, a few somewhat serious problems, but by and large, I guess the results as we have them now seem to, in most districts at least reflect the will of the voters. And I think that's the big point. I mean, you can probably never really make sure that you don't have any problems. But I think what the important thing about these elections are is that the voters, the majority's vote is reflected in the outcome.
That's why I really wonder, though, about this Hashuri thing, because it's so blatant, it's so obvious, and it so taints the reputation of the security services and them kind of jumping into the precincts that it just seems so out of character. Because you would think, I mean, in terms of, you know, violations, you think, you know, it's individuals or is it centrally planned? I think we could say it's not centrally planned in this case.
No.
There was a, you know, a real effort to make them.
Hashuri has always been a very problematic place. We remember a few months ago when this one citizen fell down the stairs of the police station in Hashuri. Allegedly.
Fell down the stairs.
Yeah, under exactly. Quotation marks. I mean, Hashuri has always been a very difficult place, just like Dushetti, for example. I mean, these are places
Isn't
where...
Isn't Ed Osi Kitzmanishvili from Hashuri?
Don't know.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's close to South Ossetia. You know, there's probably a lot of smuggling business going in and out of there. And that whole area around, not just, you know...
One street going through. I mean,
yeah, a lot of criminals and I don't know, yeah. But anyway, I mean, I do hope that the Interior Ministry is going to figure out, you know, who and why that happened and, you know, somebody will have a stern talking to. The CEC is required to publish the final results within 20 days of the election. Bidzina was congratulated by the new U.S. ambassador. Incidentally, he stated that his first trip as prime minister will be to the United States.
Which is actually, I think, a very important signal. And you had the Wall Street Journal and CNN and all these kind of media outlets that really don't know anything about the region coming out with stories the elections are a win for Russia,
yeah.
Like headlines like Georgia is going to move closer to Russia, just like based on nothing,
on
sensationalism.
Yeah, that was a little ridiculous. I mean, I, you know, it's just, it would be nice if they would either get some sharp freelancers, you know.
And the Wall Street Journal had the best freelancer in the country,
yeah.
And well, not this time, before.
Right, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, really, who was it?
I don't know. There's this guy who hangs out downstairs sometimes. I don't know.
Russia's Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev commented. Actually, you know, who cares what Dmitry Medvedev said? Really? I mean, you know, who cares? The OECD
kind of
it was innocuous.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, whatever.
But it only makes sense in your accent.
Dmitry Medvedev. So the OECD and Pace and all the other Utskhalebi said that Georgia passed the test. I was at the press conference. They said, these guys said, passed the test, and they were guys. Passed the test four times during that press conference. And it made me think, like, the test. Like, you know, this, I don't know, somehow it feels like, oh, really? Thanks. So we passed the test. Okay. Yeah. You know, thank you, teacher. Anyway, the OSCE said that, quote, while freedoms of association, assembly, and expression were respected overall, instances of harassment, intimidation of party activists and supporters negatively affected the campaign environment and often ended with detentions and fines of mostly opposition-affiliated campaigners, end quote. This is a confusing statement in that it lumps together the voting day conduct with the pre-election period. In total, 337 violations were filed with the CEC. These include reports from ISFET and TI Georgia that observers in Khashoggi had to leave the polling station because Spetsnaz forces entered after the polls closed. Chairman of the Central Election Commission, Zurab Kharatashvili, said that at least two precincts will be annulled. The Sikhnahi situation... that Matthias mentioned. The biggest problem with that was that after this fraud was found, instead of annulling that station yesterday,
even on election day, everybody was saying, we were saying, shut
right.
that station down because the commission was screwing around and were
right.
violating procedures from the morning.
And if that had happened then there might not be this worry that, like, you know, in the swing districts that there's, you know, that it's not going to be fair. But they waited for a long enough time that crowds started to, you know.
The people don't believe in good intentions anymore.
Exactly. You know, so anyway, lesson to be learned there. According to Levon Bezhashvili, who was a former head of the Chamber of Control, who was running there against Gela Galashvili in Sikhnahi, very close race.
So if we remember, Levon was the one who decided that he was going to go back to Kakheti to be with his people after the floods.
Right, and who'd been the head of the Supreme Audit, you know, Chamber of Fining Bidzina. So Petri Skaro, Khalatashvili claimed that the DECs were forced to change their initial decision as a result of pressure and intimidation by Georgian Dream leader Sosar Subadi, along with 500 activists. According to CEC data from all but one precinct in Petri Skaro, single mandate constituency, UNM's majoritarian candidate, Dato Bejashvili, is in the lead by 161 votes over Georgian Dream's Shalva Khachapuridze. Real person. According to a UNM statement, we need another Khachapuridze in parliament. It's been a while. It's been like, what, you know, like 10 years.
Yeah, but that one makes a lot of nasty statements.
Yeah, this is not Khachapuridze would actually, you know, like to hear those statements from. But who knows? Maybe he'll get a stern talking to. According to UNM statement, there are other single mandate constituencies where intimidation is incurring. The list is Terjola, Amralauri, Kutaisi, Martvili, Zugdidi, Siknachi, Marneuli, Tetrikskhar, Skalka, Khashuri, and Bolnisi. Other listed violations include physical assault of district commissioner, chairman of polling station number 16 in Rustavi, in Martviling, precinct number 3, a voter list meant for use of the mobile box was stolen in Dusheti, precinct number 25. There are no voter lists available for the precinct registrars, and they were forced to use lists meant for the public to verify personal information. You know, that's just not important. I don't think that's so important.
There were like a few funny things. Like there was, I think in two or three Tbilisi stations, our observers saw people stealing ballot papers to start kind of a carousel.
Sabatello, by the way.
Yeah, in one station we had a guy who actually like took off with a bunch of ballot sheets and ran out. And our observers went after him by car. Then he started calling people, like what should I do?
You know? what do I do? Is somebody chasing me?
And then police arrived, and UNM people arrived, and Georgian Dream people arrived. And they started a fight. And while they were busy fighting with each other, he ran away. So it was like classic cartoon situation.
Exactly. Kind of, oh, boy. Yeah. Keystone Cops and Summertime.
In the background.
Yes, UNM spokesman Chiodo Takhtakashvili has confirmed that there were people keeping, you know, with the ruling party, with the voters list, keeping records of people in front of the stations. Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, there were a lot of that. There's nothing illegal about that. I think that there were also probably Georgian Dream people in front of stations, although I don't know if they were checking lists. I mean, in reality, that can be... I mean, there's not really anything you can do about it, but I mean, it's
you could have like an area where there's no campaigning allowed, like 30 meters.
That's not the problem. Yeah. The problem is voter intimidation. That if you can, you know, that you can say like, you know, you're going to lose your job unless you go in and vote, you know, or this and that, or if we see you voting because we know you're an opposition supporter, we're going to tick your name off the list, and there'll be problems, you know, after nobody is paying attention anymore. You know, there can be things like that. It's just, I mean, considering how, you know, freaked out and so much time the Election Commission spent on talking about cameras and how that could intimidate people inside the polling station, nobody seemed to be too bothered about people with lists in front of the polling station.
Right, and they were in a bunch of places, like in Batumi, all over the place, there were these Ministry of Interior-style cars, you know, SUVs with dark windows parked outside.
You saw
the station.
I mean, I put this. I published the picture, but the picture of the goon squad hanging out in front of Gegan Ava's office on right at the corner of Alexander Chachavadze and Rustaveli. I mean, there were like 60 dudes with tight black T-shirts, sunglasses, and you know, big paunches, like sitting on the benches out front.
Actually, the day before the election, so the Georgian Dream had their people with, you know, flags and honking, driving up and down Rustaveli, and then Geganava had his people doing the same like half the day. Yeah. And then when they got tired, they all parked on the Ministry of Interior parking space up on Javtchavadze. So most of them had put down their number 5 flags, but some still had them. And so there is an indication that they were actually legitimately
there. The way you can tell is that the dark windows that were all illegally parked, only Interior Ministry people can and government officials can have dark
windows.
So if you have a bunch of cars, especially gigantic black ones, you know, any car with dark windows, you know, is a government car, you know, must be by law now. So, T.I. George has written up information on what happens next. If there is a gross violation of the law in that district, in which results of more than half the votes precincts declared invalid, the CEC gets to determine whether elections need to be repeated in the district. A repeat election cannot delay the sitting of the next parliament, which must take place, as stated, in 20 days.
One interesting issue I think is the citizenship issue that is still a little bit up in the air and unresolved. most people, I think, are interpreting the constitution in a way that Bidzina, as a non-Georgian citizen, would have been allowed to run for the parliament and for the presidential election.
Well, what I'm hearing from the Tpilpod special University of Chicago law school trained lawyer man is that he cannot run.
Right.
That he cannot serve unless the citizenship issue is changed,
right,
which would require a change of something,
he's,
the Constitution, which is, you know...
I
saw that he said that he was going to use the amendment that had been made to allow him to run for office under
that.
Not
for prime minister.
No, but anyway, the language was somehow, you know, could be vaguely interpreted that...
It says for...
Anyway, while the current constitution allows the president to decide whom he wishes to nominate as the new prime minister, Giga Boketti, in an address, said that given the large margin of Georgian Dream's electoral victory, the president would nominate a candidate offered by Georgian Dream. Following David Dina claimed that his statements regarding Misha's resignation was not a demand nor an ultimatum. He said Georgian Dream is ready for constructive relations and compromise. He's established some cuts, three-member troika group. That is Usupashvili, Garibashvili, and Alassania. So the first seating of the newly elected parliament will be within 20 days of the election. The president selects the date, so it can be before that, but has to be before 20 days. If there are any reruns, they need to be held within 2 weeks of the election date. Within 20 days after that, 40 days from the election date, there must be the presentation of the prime minister, who then presents, I think within 7 days, has to present the cabinet.
Which he has to do in cooperation with the president, because the president has a say on the three power ministries, Interior,
right,
Defense, and Justice.
Then they've got 10 days to accept or reject that candidate, cabinet. If it's accepted or rejected three times, if it's accepted, great. If it's rejected three times, which... You know, seems unlikely. I mean, I think there's going to be a deal, right? I mean, they're not
right.
Gonna,
but
know.
Misha could still kind of use his leverage when it comes to Ministry of Interior.
Of course, but I mean, I think surely that will be arranged.
Right.
But anyway,
right.
Okay. Theoretically, there could be, you know, three times, and then that would precipitate. And I was asking the smart people that know about this stuff what would happen. I mean, it seems to me what would happen would be nothing. That the current ministers would just stay there. There'd be a vote of no confidence. They would say, we don't have confidence, and nothing would happen because the proposal, you know, that had already been, the ministers had already been presented. So then there's the six-month rule, so that that would stick around until 6 months. But if Misha calls elections for October 1st, if you count back, that goes to exactly 6 months from these elections. And so... There would be a particular window that could be the elections have to be called, the presidential elections have to be in the month of October, so it would be the month of April in which, depending on when the presidential elections are called, which is up to the president, when in October they'd happen, you know, that there could be, you know, some sort of changes.
Well, I thought it was 6 months either way, right? So right. 6 months from the seating of parliament, and then 6 months before the elections,
I think it's 6 months after the parliamentary elections.
After the election, not the seating of parliament.
I don't think so.
Okay. I also wanted to ask, you know by when they have to make a decision regarding runoffs?
I think it's like 10... Well, I think they just have to be held within 14 days.
But we don't know by when
but
they
when
have
to.
I know that the election day is the runoff day is 2 weeks, the Sunday 2 weeks, or the 2 weeks after the first round. Basically.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know whether it's 7 or 10 days or something like that, but, you know, one would think soon. Okay.
But
so,
then the other thing, I'm sorry, about the prime minister, I mean, we should all remember that the prime minister probably won't last, I mean, unless it's somebody that's a candidate that's decided together and is supported by the Georgian Dream, that person's not going to last after the new president.
Well, who knows? I mean, you know, it depends on what's negotiated. I mean, I think a lot of it depends on Vano, and, you know, so we'll see, you know, we'll see where that goes. And there are a lot of things being negotiated now. I mean, I would imagine in terms of personal holdings and, you know, all sorts
immunity.
Of different things. Immunity and all, I mean, formal and informal. I mean, I don't know. Who knows what's being discussed related to that? Anyway, so the president retains the power to dissolve parliament, but is barred from doing so within 6 months after a parliamentary election and less than 6 months before the end of his term. Depending on the date of the presidential elections in 2013, there could be a few weeks or days in the spring of 2013 during April, during which the president could legally dissolve parliament. Bidzina has called on judicial authorities to reinstate his citizenship in order to serve as prime minister. This was taken away 10 months ago. The constitutional provision, which would have allowed Ivanishvili to take part in the parliamentary elections, had he chosen to do so, does not specifically mention the role of prime minister. Many observers believe that he cannot become prime minister without having Georgian citizenship. A decision by the constitutional court might be required in order to determine whether the amendment gives Ivanishvili the right to become prime minister, assuming he does not gain Georgian citizenship. If the court does not, Bidzina says he will use constitutional amendments to allow citizens of the EU member states to, you know, like, for example, Austria, to participate in political activity provided they were born in Georgia.
Oh. Yeah.
Sorry.
Lived there for 5 years. But you need a parliament and a constitutional majority for that. And it takes at least a month, probably, you know, more than
right.
that. So it's not something that you can fix overnight.
You need to change the constitution.
Yeah.
Yeah. In an internet.ge article quoted Bidzina on October 2nd regarding his current plans about staffing the cabinet ministers, quote, "I have not thought about the minister's cabinet. I haven't talked with my team about it. I want you to know that none of the members of our team know what I intend to do with them."
That's great that he shares that with
everybody.
None of them
are going to stay.
Yeah.
But none of them are going to stay. That's the other point.
Also, the UNM has said, yeah, you know, we're not going to stay anyways with him. We're in the opposition now, so... one interesting thing is also the constitution bans him from having double citizenship as a prime minister, so he would have to resign his French citizenship as he had announced he would do anyway.
You think they'd give him a Schengen visa? What do you think?
So you can't be a dual citizen, but you don't have to be a Georgian citizen.
Well, the problem is the constitution doesn't define, you know, president, chair of parliament, like everybody has to be a Georgian citizen, but they didn't really specify members of the government have to be.
Well, they were in a hurry.
Citizen.
Come on, I mean, you know, like,
and then, you can go down. Like, there's a law on civil service that says, you know, civil servants should be Georgian citizens, but
right.
But then there's also somewhere a provision that says non-Georgian citizens, you know, if not otherwise specified, should be treated in the same way as Georgian citizens. I don't know.
You know, which is why it's good to have a bunch of people go over constitutional changes to have a little bit of time.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't be maybe as difficult as it is in the American Constitution,
yeah.
You know, but still.
But I liked some people argued, you know, well, they were in such a rush with the last amendment, they just forgot to, you know, like kind of explicitly mention it. You know, they thought about it, but then it was just a typo that,
oh,
you know, forgot.
On, you know.
So the intent was clear.
All right.
It's a constitution, you know, it's not something binding. It's like, you know.
It's just like whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, the Georgian weekly publication, Asavalda Savaldi, an incredibly goofy publication, which bizarrely Bidzina Ivanishvili has said he thinks is a wonderful newspaper, published the names and addresses of employees of Goldani Prison Number 8 in what appears to be an attempt to incite violence. This received condemnation from the newly appointed prison minister, Georgi Tughushi, as well as NGOs, including TI Georgia. And a self-regulating body, the Georgian Charter of Journalistic Ethics.
Actually, did they say why they did it? I'm sure they didn't say they were doing it to incite violence.
Oh, I don't know. They're such goofballs. I mean, you know, of course. Like, you know, they're set off in a box. I mean, you know, they're saying, here's a list of the home addresses of the guys who work at Goldani Prison Number 8. I mean,
Just FYI.
Yeah. Anybody's interested, you know. I mean, total losers, those guys are.
Well, maybe, I don't know. Not that I'm saying that someone should go to these people's homes and do something to them, but I think at the same time...
But that's what you're saying when you print the addresses.
No, but listen.
You're saying people should go to their houses.
No, listen. If you remember what happened in, 2006 with, why do I not remember his poor name? The banker.
Sandro
Girgiani. Yeah, and how Dato Akhalai and all these people were, you know, involved in that. There was so much effort, you know, to try and bring these people to justice. And then the justice that was given, you know, was delivered was just completely ridiculous. And I think that, you know, people have a memory of that. They want to make sure that those people are responsible and that those people don't get away with it. And
The absence of justice in the Ghirvliani case was an important aspect of the loss of the national movement. So if you're saying, like, because we don't think that we can get justice through normal means, then, okay, we'll sort of go another direction. I mean, I know you're not saying that, but that leads in dangerous, dangerous places. And it's a big question right now. What's going to happen with Georgian Dream? Are they going to say, like, because justice wasn't served, then, let's start publishing home addresses? Could say that. This neighborhood, that's happened quite often, in the last, couple hundred years.
Yeah, no, I don't agree with it. And I think that it's a bad idea, especially to provide home addresses. I think even, giving names is probably a bad idea before there's been any sort of investigation. But I think, with the memory that people have of the justice,
What happened under Shevardnadze, there were a bunch of guys that stole a bunch of money. And they said, okay, we're going to have this deal where we lock them up and take the money. And it was not particularly transparent, as I write in the Georgian Journal this week. And became the criminal. Under Shevardnadze. And so when Saakashvili came in, he got all those guys, locked them up, and took their money. But that then became the criminal justice system, which is now based on plea bargaining and not on courts and a fair hearing and a transparent system. And so right now the criminal justice system is not fair. There cannot be justice in it. So it needs to be reformed somehow. The question is, are they going to spend their effort, having somebody, not really sure who, the editorial board of Dasavalda Savaldi, pointing fingers at these people? What if they made a mistake? The wrong apartment number?
There's 1,000 people who work at the prison. I was there on election day. There's 1,000 people who work. No, sorry, 600 something people who are staff in that prison. Everybody's probably involved in beating people.
Of course. But so far, the only thing that's happened, as far as I understand, is that Asavalda Savali's been there's a protest in front of Asavalda Savali.
Well, actually, it was in front of the Patriarch's office, as far as I know, getting him to tell people to, cool it.
Because there were also priests in the crowd that were saying that they believed that what Asavalda Savali did was appropriate.
Right. And yes, those priests were drunk. And that brings up a whole other issue that we're not going to get into right now, which is the church and whose side is on who there. But let us all agree that mob justice is a real and present danger that is not going to do anybody any favors right now, whether it's in Zugdidi or at somebody's house that happened to be employed at Gildani number 8.
Hear, hear.
Today, Dato Kesedashvili has bought 30% of the shares of Rustavioti for $500,000 and 30% of Mze for $250,000, according to netgazeti.ge. He bought the shares from the very, very well-known Levan Karamanishvili.
Yeah, so Levan Karamanishvili is a businessman who is widely assumed to be closely affiliated with the outgoing government. He is the guy who founded Beeline. Interesting anecdote. And of Beeline has somewhat opaque minority shareholders whom he represents, it appears. He also represents the very opaque shareholders of Caucasus Online. Yeah. And he happens to be the official kind of shareholder of Rustavi too, 90% of that. A businessman, yes. He's also in GMG Group, this restaurant chain, a bunch of other businesses. He's also involved with the Marshutka lines.
The Marshutka privatization deal.
Good businessman.
Mr. Karamanishvili seems to be everywhere.
Mr. Dato Kesedashvili is the former defense minister.
And a citizen of Israel.
Yes.
And a well-known guy, head of the financial police. Under the long-suffering finance minister, Lexo Alexashvili.
And wasn't he caught fleeing during the invasion in 2008?
I didn't catch him. But, wasn't that Kodua? Kodua was the one who was like, I'm out of here!
I just recently saw actually a list of who left and when they left and when they came back.
One of these lists, you see it in Dasavalda Savaldi or?
Along with the dresses.
You and your list that you're so excited about, unbelievable.
But Kesedashvili has been involved in the media sector, advertising, outdoor TV.
He's the head of Gulf.
Also the company that runs Lukoil in Georgia. He won the not very transparent auction of the lottery license.
Oh, that's right. Doesn't run the lottery anymore.
No, they were given back to the government, or 70% are now controlled by the Georgian Post. He similarly ran the newspaper kiosks in Tbilisi that were also given back 70% to the government. So he's involved. He, I think, is also the person who managed to take over the retailer that sold Elite Electronics. Mm. That one.
Oh, that was a mess. The Elite Electronics.
Yeah, I think he was also somehow allegedly.
And that guy got sent to jail because he wouldn't. I don't know.
Because TBC wouldn't be able to collect some of the bank loans, allegedly, but he said, I was actually paying back and they shut me down. And like, it was a big mess. So Kezdrashvili has been involved in many, many things, prominent businessman. And now I think that those are the first signs that, you know, with a new government, the control over the media sector and probably some other sectors is going to shift.
Call me crazy, but yeah, I'd say that's probably the case. Yeah, yeah, they... I mean, that whole deal, I mean, how Rustavi II and Imedi was taken over in the way that the officials would say, well, they're just an independent, you know, TV station, was just really annoying. Now,
what, you mean businessmen aren't going to be in favor of responsible government?
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, the question is also what's going to happen to Channel 9 now? And I don't know about Maestro, but, I mean, people... I just watching during the elections, people were watching Maestro. Nobody was watching Channel 9. Everybody was watching Maestro. And
I mean, even people working at Channel 9 says, you know, like, sometimes it's a bit embarrassing. We had to put, like, all the, you know, the local Georgian Dream guy in, you know, I don't know where, meeting seven people. Like, he requests a camera team and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, so I don't know. Is it going to just sort of stay the party mouthpiece, or is something going to happen to it, or will it stick around? I mean, are we going to have, like, and what's going to happen to Rustavi II and Imedi? Is it just going to become, are they now going to become, you know, carbon copies of Channel 9 working for Georgian Dream? I mean, or what? I mean, I don't know.
Or what they were before under Shevardnadze? I mean, at least Rustavi.
Yeah.
But $500,000. I mean, Rustavi too had a turnover or revenues last year of $25 million. $500,000 for 30% is very cheap for a media
outlet.
That's
a wise businessman. Now, you don't get rich by buying high.
Maybe they're dumping it.
So, according to Sarkey Press Monitors, fines levied on the Georgian Dream Coalition during the electoral campaign for supposed violations totaled 2.86 million lari, of which only 122,000 lari were paid because the National Bureau of Enforcement postponed executions of the fines following recommendations by the Interagency Commission for Free and Fair Elections, or as it was known, the Bokeria Commission. The Bureau now says that they're not going to enforce payments of these fines. Wise move.
Wait, what? What? I thought they already took the money.
Evidently not.
No, there was a small fine in the end.
So, foreignpolicy.com reports that on Sunday, a 10-month-old infant from Kolagi was found in drowned in a buried cavity half full of water. The girl's aunt was a local coordinator for the Georgian Dream, and opposition claimed the tragedy was related to politics, implying UNM involvement. So far, two family members have been arrested in connection with the child's death. No further evidence emerged that politics played a role in the case. Yeah, this was like the night, the night before the election?
Right.
And it just went all
SMS
over Facebook.
Were,
and it was just like, really? I mean, there was a lot of, you know, really horrible things said, mainly by Georgian Dream supporters. I mean, and it just brought out the absolute worth. I mean, you know, a child died, essentially, is what happens, which is a terrible thing. And the fact that would be tied, I mean, okay, it was at the very fever pitch of the timetable of the elections, but you know, it was just, I don't know, it didn't say anything very good that people would sort of take it to that level in terms of, you know, guilty until proven innocent. I mean, right now there's an investigation and what happened, it's not really clear, but it seems as if that was an accidental death, and nobody has really given any indication that it was anything other than that. The EBRD forecasts that the Georgian economy will increase by 5.5% in 2012. Inflation is forecast to remain at 2%. So let's talk about that basket. Just kidding. Areas which the EBRD suggests the government ought to work on include the rule of law, promoting further improvement in the public sector's administration, and stimulating educational attainment and the acquisition of skills by the population. Iran's official Islamic Republic news agency reported that the Georgian foreign minister, Grigol Vashadze, on Tuesday met with his Iranian counterpart, Ali Akbar Saleh, in New York during the 67th UN General Assembly. They discussed increased ballistic economic, just kidding, bilateral economic, cultural, scientific, and technological relations between the two countries.
Is that the same news agency that picked up a story by The Onion that said that Ahmadinejad is more popular than Obama? And they were like,
yeah, that was hysterical. And then they actually, I think a day later, they were like, okay, yeah, you're sorry. And they
don't get irony, really. Yeah.
I know. Also, this sentence, let me read it again, because I feel like I've read this sentence like 6,000 or 8,000 times in my life. They discussed increased bilateral economic, cultural, scientific, and technological relations between the two countries. I don't think that's what they discussed. You know, I really don't think they said anything at all about economic, cultural, scientific, and technological relations, but okay. Rustavi 2 reported on October 3rd that Dato Gamkerlidze stepped down as leader of the New Rights Party following the party's failure to overcome the 5% threshold barrier to enter parliament. The party's executive secretary, Reva Sokhadze, will be acting chairman of the party until the new chairman is elected. Gamkerlidze is leaving politics after having served as chairman of the New Rights Party since it was founded in 2001. In fact, I remember when it was founded, and it was really funny because that was a time in which there was, you know, arguments between Vanya and Shevardnadze they had this quite an intense time. Rustavi II was a time in which Rustavi II was shut down. They had big demonstrations. Vanya, I can't remember whether it was just before or after, Vanya resigned as chair. And the New Right said, now's our chance. We can become Shevardnadze's designated party. We'll take over from the Citizens Union. Citizens Union will be a shell with all the young reformers or young English speakers, as Shevardnadze referred to them. And that's it. And we can be the new government party and all get really rich. I mean, even though we're pretty rich, we can get even richer, you know, being the designated party. And so they set themselves up, a bunch of businessmen, Grechicha and all of these different guys. And then, you know, and then Shevardnadze says, nope, Zuna's still my guy. But they'd already publicly set up the party, so they sort of didn't like, so what does that mean? Are we in opposition now or whatever? And so they just sort of stumbled along for 2 years, not really sure who they were supposed to be. And if you will then remember that when Misha brought in all the people from San Magrelo in 2003 over the weekend, it was a Friday night in late November, Parliament was supposed to sit on Saturday, and a lot of the MPs actually slept in Parliament to try and get quorum. It was pretty close. And the night before that, the New Rights had a big, you know, session to figure out what are we going to do, and the party split over that. And Grechicha did not help them make quorum, but Dato Gamkerlidze came in at the very end that morning with the MPs that went with him and gave Shevardnadze and what remained of the Citizens Union and Gordzineba, Abashidze's revival party, the quorum that they needed. So they sat Parliament, and Shevardnadze started giving a long speech, and Misha rushed in, and the rest is history. Sorry for that long little digression there, but anyway, Gamkerlidze, Dato, it's been great. We wish you the best of success in the insurance industry. So, according to Prime News, about 50 IDPs demanded a meeting with the Minister of Refugees and Accommodation, have broken into the house at Tashkenti No. 7 in Sabartalo District in Tbilisi. The refugees are refusing to let anyone enter, including police officers near the site, according... they claim that the building is allocated to the Ministry of Refugees and Accommodation. Prime News Agency reports that Ivanishvili has stated that he will continue the investigation into the death of Zura Zhvanya. Black Sea Press reports that the Tbilisi-based head office of Liberty Bank on Chavchavadze Avenue near Vake Park caught fire this past Friday. 16 floors along the elevator shaft caught fire because of repair work being done on the 15th floor. Fortunately, everybody was evacuated and nobody was hurt. Repair works are underway. May I also say that it would be nice if there were better building codes and safety regulations for people doing construction work in Georgia. All right, Novosti reports that a South Ossetian border checkpoint was fired upon on Saturday, September 29th. South Ossetian news agency RES reported that the officers of the Border Service arrested Mogol Tomiashvili, a Georgian Interior Ministry official who allegedly had a weapon on him. The ministry confirmed that Tomiashvili was detained. Prime News Agency reports that police have detained another individual over the recent prison torture scandal. The individual detained on September 29th was controller of Kutaisi No. 2 prison, Irakli Amidanishvili. And his address is... No, just kidding. This brings the total number of individuals detained to 19. On September 28th, according to Interfax, the Georgian Energy Ministry announced the building tender for the 18-megawatt Orbeli hydropower plant for the river Lajanuri in western Georgia. The price tag is expected to be around $50 million. Proposals of investors will be accepted until October 26th.
I just had I wanted to ask, have you guys heard anything about what they're doing related to rehiring or retraining the prison officials or prison guards? Nothing?
I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, because they all were supposed to be fired, right?
Well, it was the cops came in for a while and then they realized that's a little silly and I don't know. So who knows?
So now they're all back?
Well, as far as I know, I don't know much not much about that.
We'll have to follow up on that. Keep an eye on
that. When I was in the prison on Monday, there were no street cops there. These were appeared to be the prison guards.
Mm-hmm.
European Court of Human Rights has ruled illegal a 2006 arrest of 5 Georgian human rights activists who were protesting outside the Tbilisi Appeals Court. The activists from the Equality Institute were protesting against the trial of the 2 owners of the opposition 202 TV channel. Prime News reported an incident on Tuesday at Rustaviotti in which 2 drunk Georgian Dream activists tried to fight with the TV station staff on company-owned property. Within a few minutes, security guards forced the activists to leave the premises. Their addresses are published in Das Wald. Prime News Agency reports that international field training Georgia 2012 ended on September 29th. Up to 1,000 members of civilian and military teams from NATO members and partner countries took place in the training. The goal was to enhance search and rescue operations. Sarke News reports that the Georgian oil and gas company temporarily suspended gas transit to Armenia because of repair work on the Russian section of the north-south gas line. BBC reports on September 29th that although the Kavkaz 2012 military drills of the Russian army held close to Georgia's border have ended, the troops seem to be in no hurry to leave the area. Mm-hmm. Trans World News, that famous news agency, reports that the Georgian defense market budget declined to $410 million for 2012. The peak was $946 million in 2008 as a result of the Russian invasion.
It's interesting because the budget was passed almost a year ago. So these guys are really,
right.
up to date.
Like somebody's just thumbing through. Yeah. So, it came off the printer, Sarke Information Agency reports that the Turkish-financed Ajada Textiles opened a new factory in Batumi. The plant will fulfill orders of brands including Puma, Lotto, and Adidas. Sarke Information Agency also reports that construction for an international golf complex has begun in Kobuleti. I'm so proud to live in a country with not one single golf course,
But finally, you can take your networking to the next level.
Don't be that guy. Funding for the course, which is expected to reach 100 million euros, will be provided by Azeri Georgian and Ukrainian investors. Of course, you can imagine the Ukrainians, Construction will be done by LLC Golf Development Georgia.
100 million euros, definitely. There will be, break even 4 months, I think.
For sure.
It's so funny. All my time in the former Soviet Union, I've never seen anyone play golf.
Yeah.
Because there are no golf courses.
Yeah, but golf is
such
a...
Just build it, they'll come?
I don't know. Yeah, can't just... like miniature golf.
They don't even have miniature golf.
Just start with miniature golf for a decade or two, Sarke News reports the construction of 2 new hotels began in Batumi. The Cube Tower, which is a $30 million Azeri investment, as well as another invested by Turks, funded by Turks. On October 6th, Fly Georgia will begin regular flights to Amsterdam twice a week, Wednesday and Saturday. Tickets will be 400 lari one way, 700 round trip. Correction. Last week, Matthias said that Wizz Air, which is a real thing, which plans to fly to Kutaisi, is from the Baltics. In fact, it is from Hungary.
Really?
Yeah, because it was Orbán with Misha, the Hungarian prime minister, who praised Misha's accomplishments.
Yeah, that's what a great endorsement that
is. Exactly. And of course, I didn't make the connection that his airline is from Hungary.
Wizz Air. What we think about Orbán. Okay, Bassiani, acclaimed Georgian choral music group, will make their Ann Arbor, Michigan debut today at 7:30 p.m., which, as we record at 7:30 p.m., will be, 10 hours earlier. So if you're in the area of Ann Arbor, check out ums.org for more details. Tbili Soba is scheduled for this weekend from October 5th to 7th. There'll be a lot going on, all sorts of booths. Starts tomorrow, so check it out. Luckily, they're not demonstrations to prevent it from
happening. There's no French president this year.
No French president this year to leave in a huff. Kolga movies this week. Anchorman, which I have not seen. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock.
Will Ferrell.
Stay sexy, San Diego. That's all I can say.
Yeah, Will Ferrell. Gotta go see that tomorrow night. Kolga. Capote Monday at Monday, October 8th, a hauntingly freakish movie. But we're seeing Diving Bell and the Butterfly, very, very cool French movie, Wednesday, October 10th, in French, English subtitles. 8 o'clock, Dom Kino across from McDonald's and Rustavelli Metro. That's it this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. That's Tango, X-Ray, Tango, Bravo, Uniform, Kilo. Our email address is tbilpod@gmail.com.
And anything we say is not affiliated with anybody we have ever worked for or will ever work with.
And especially we work for now.
And hopefully for a while. It cannot be held against us or put in Dasavaldi Savaldi or anything. You know,
Mark's
please.
Address is...
Also post to our thriving forum at tbilpod.com.
And we recognized all the complaints that the past episodes were deleted. I think that has been addressed.
I think we fixed that. Any other problems with that? You have iTunes, like we always have iTunes problems, something like that. If you have any problems like that, please let us know or post on our Facebook page or something like that, and we'll try to remember to check them. We are finishing with 1977, the immortal Marvin Gaye and Gotta Give It Up.